Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode 16. Michael Citro here, managing editor from themainland.com. We're here to talk a little bit about Orlando City Soccer Club. And joining me this week, Austin David and Kevin Mercer. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hello.
Thanks for having me once again.
You know, first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about that Chicago Fire game. Orlando City goes up to Chicago, gets their first win against an Eastern Conference opponent here in MLS play, and didn't honestly play that well for periods of the game. Got a little scrambly at times, and certainly had a lot of issues with Chicago Fire's counterattacks. I thought that the passing in the final third early in the game wasn't particularly good, but, you know, they got the job done. They turned it around, subs came on, performed well. You know, people will say, oh, they got lucky because Adi Hilton put in two goals, but if Adi Hilton's not there, those goals are going in anyway. So let's start with you, Austin. Your overall thoughts on the performance by Orlando City?
Overall? I like the fact that we had a lot of possession. That was kind of the biggest thing I think people took away from the game. You know, you look at the stats, 63% possession, but yet at the same time, you know, only three goals to show for it, and only one coming from, you know, an Orlando City player. That kind of, you know, it there's a lot that remains to be, you know, seen with the team, because, you know, it's still a work in progress. And I feel like we keep repeating that every week. It's still a work in progress. You know, and now coming into this game next week, you're going to have Kyle Larin away. Brian Rochez, I think, might be back because Honduras got knocked out of the U-20s World Cup. And of course, Martin Patterson's still injured. So that'll be fun trying to, you know, score goals with the ever-changing front man, unless Pedro Ribeiro plays up once again. And I want to say about Pedro, I was very impressed with his 66 minutes that he put into the game. You know, it wasn't flashy by any means. He just did what needed to be done, you know, and created, you know, a few chances here and there. But going forward,
well, he really made that first goal. I mean, his strength and his presence forced that first own goal, because, you know, he just came in there hard, and there was no way Adi Hilton was going to hold him off, big and strong as he is. And so if it hadn't hit Adi Hilton's leg, it was going to be Pedro just tapping it in anyway. So, but you mentioned something about the, you know, work in progress. Kevin, at what point do we stop saying this is a work in progress and say this is the team?
Probably when we start the playoffs or next season. I think the whole season will be a work in progress, and I think that that's normal. I don't think it's a problem. I think the takeaway from this game was that we've seen teams play us not very well and beat us at home. And I think that we finally did that. And I think that is a step in the right direction in a lot of ways, that we did not play our best game, but we played away against a team we should beat in Chicago, in terms of just that they are still also a work in progress, and that's a winnable game for us, that we found a way to win. And I think that good teams find ways to win. We've seen teams do that to us all the time. So I think that's the takeaway from the game for the most part. So,
yeah, the funny thing to me was the number of chances that, you know, Orlando City had that were decent chances, nothing came of them. And then all of a sudden, you know, things just started changing, mainly with Kyle Larin's rocket. What I specifically mean is Eric Avila, there was a sequence where he had three shots blocked, I think, in like the span of a few seconds. And then Darwin Serin had a laser that was that John Bush made a great save on, and then missed the net with a couple other pretty good chances. And it looked like all of those chances were quality chances and nothing came of them. But yet, you know, you get a ball, through ball forward to Carlos Rivas, and he makes a timely, you know, cross, and
he passes,
deflects in, and
Rivas passes.
Yeah. So I think what this kind of said to me was that the team is maybe starting to listen to Adrian Heath when he talks about, you know, you don't have to play harder, you have to play smarter. And I thought this was a much smarter game, especially from Carlos Rivas, but from a lot of the guys, you know, in fact. And the only real down parts I thought were there were some real misses with some connecting passes in the final third. The right side didn't work well on Saturday, although I think a lot of that had to do with being overly aware of David Akam. And, you know, then, of course, the new pairing of St. Ledger and Colin had a few moments of miscommunication. Austin, what do you think we're going to see from the back line against DC United on Sunday? What starting four?
I think at this point you're still going to see Ramos, St. Ledger, Colin, and Bowden. Just because I think Seb Hines, as much as he did well the first few games, he's had a bit of a rough spell the last few games or so. St. Ledger did, you know, he's done well. He's a veteran. He'll be the guy that's playing up there with Colin. And of course, Colin, he's, you know, it seems like every time he plays, he's on, you know, team of the week for one website or another, and our man of the match usually. So, you know, it's, you can't really argue taking him out at this point. And you know, I guess that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, I think you have to get Aurelien Collin back on the pitch. And Adrian said that guys work really hard to get in the team. And once they get in the team, if they play well, you have to keep them in there and reward them for that. It's partly why we haven't seen Amobi Okugo much since Saren and Agita got in there.
Mm.
But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Kevin, where does Breck Shea fit into the lineup this week? I'm assuming he's going to play up at left attacking mid with Kaká and maybe Avila and Ribeiro as the striker. Where do you see the attack forming on Sunday against DC?
Well, I think of course with Shea coming back, and he didn't play today, which was fantastic for us. Not for his national team career, but fantastic for us. I think you'll see him integrating the attack with Kaká and Saren. I think those three right now have really been the core of our attack, with kind of that interchangeable piece up front. We've seen Rivera and Laren both play well. Laren won't be there this week. But I think that you really see, I think, and that's kind of always been kind of a trademark, you think back to the USL days. We've always had kind of the attack coming out of the midfield. So I think it continues like it does. I think with maybe a little more chemistry than it's had in the past. I think Kaká and Saren have, I think Kaká's first mode of business in Orlando was to bond with Molino. And then after that has unfortunately not worked out with the injuries, I think he's had to kind of reattempt to bond with someone new in the midfield. And I think it's coming along.
Yeah. All right, so let me ask both you guys. Austin, you can go first. Who's your man of the match against the Fire?
I'd say Aurelien Collin, just because, you know, coming off that injury, first game back, you know, saved a bunch of goals, you know, tackles right at the last second, just being solid at the back. It could have been a lot worse than it was in terms of, you know, score-wise. You know, like you said, David Akam, and him and Kennedy Igbonanike, I heard they were fast, but actually seeing them against Orlando City, and I thought, you know, some of our guys are fast, but then you see Akam going down that left wing against Ramos, and it's like, wow. So you know, I'm impressed that we only let up those two goals in terms of the counterattack that Chicago tried to implement against Orlando. So, you know, credit to the defense for that.
Kevin, who's your man of the match?
I like Colin, but I'll for the sake of and I think Austin makes a good argument for Colin. For the sake of the podcast, I'll say Kaká. I think that I've been critical. I think not critical is not the right word, but I think we all expected a lot from him right out of the gate, and he's played very, very well. I think you finally see him really learning the league and how he can contribute best to our team. I think that you see, you know, a lot of creativity in the midfield that's creating good chances for the people around him, and the people around him are learning to make those chances, to finish those chances. So I think I'll give it to Kaká this week, but I think certainly you could look at Sarin as well. I thought he had a pretty good game, and of course I think Colin had a great game as well. So.
Yeah, I agree, and both good choices. I thought Kyle Larrant came on and only played, 24 minutes or so, but I thought he really changed the energy of the game at the time. Very good sub, and obviously he scored the second goal to equalize and was in position to really create that third goal by making that run. I mean, he was really on his horse. He was way behind Rivas, and Rivas came up the left side, and Larrant caught up to him. Rivas caught sight of him and tried to get the ball over to him and ended up in the net. You could make a case for Larrant as well. But I actually do think that Colin was the man of the match, too. I agree. His timely, vital challenges really kept that game from getting away. And by being able to stay close throughout the game, Orlando City was able to come back from two different deficits and eventually take the lead. So I'll go with Colin as well. But there are no wrong answers here.
I
just want to get that out there.
Yeah, I wanted to actually just kind of point out Luke Bowden for his runs that he made down that left wing. He wasn't quite there defensively, obviously, with the keeping up with the pace on those wings, but he did really well making creating space not only for himself but getting down the field and allowing. Ribeiro to get into the box, putting in the services. There was a good chance early in the game for Ribeiro where he put it right on his chest and unfortunately, didn't quite go the way they planned. But, there were a lot of good runs from Bowden that I'd like to see a lot more of.
Yeah,
he was definitely good on the offensive end. I still think he's learning the league a bit. And he's taken some lumps on the defensive side, but he's solid. If he had a little more quickness, you could tell that he knows what to do. His body doesn't always get him in that position
to do that.
That's what I'll say too, Michael. Yeah.
So I think we're all pretty much in agreement. And honestly, this team through the early part of the season, the defense has been surprisingly good overall as a whole. And it's been the attacking that has been lacking for, although that rhymes, the attacking has been lacking. But it seems to have started to swing around, and guys are starting to step up and take their chances. Guys like Darwin Seren, getting shots, and also, Christian Higuita taking the ball away in midfield and actually driving at defenders and forcing the other team back on their heels. It's really starting to look like an Adrian Heath team, isn't it, Kevin?
It really is. I was thinking when we were talking about Colin before how Colin really fits that mold of the kind of traditional Adrian Heath defenders. He loves those big, kind of real big, bulky, masculine, kind of Greek god kinds of players that are just real, almost like specimens of height and strength. You see it, and I think we talk a lot about, as longtime fans, we talk a lot about Bowden, we talk about Sarin, we talk about these guys who've been around before, and you see how they are kind of integrating into this system now the other teams are kind of integrating in, and you see those players like Bowden and Sarin now excelling because the players around them are playing a system they recognize. And I think that, you can kind of see it all kind of coming together like that. But yeah, it is sort of an Adrian Heath team. I think you're exactly right.
So it's the first win over an Eastern Conference team. It's an unbeaten streak of 4-2 wins and 2 draws. A little sandwich there. A win, 2 draws, and then another win. We got to turn our attention now to a team that has beaten Orlando City twice, although Orlando City, it could be argued, was the better side in both games. DC United, the first game, Orlando City just flat-out dominated the game and couldn't beat Bill Hamid. It was a combination of missing the net and Bill Hamid being pretty darn fantastic. But that combination equaled no goals, and then the late penalty kick and stoppage time won it for DC United. They got all the points. Second meeting, DC United getting beat 1-0 in the second half. Everything going pretty much according to plan. Orlando City starting to pull in the reins and tighten up, keep their shape defensively, and try to grind out that road win. and Aurelian Collins strains his hamstring. The only person that was healthy enough to put on the pitch as a central defender was Tyler Turner, a right back who's not incredibly tall and very inexperienced. And that went about as well as you'd expect. DC comes back and wins 2-1. Austin, we'll start with you. Is this the game where Orlando City finally not only outplays DC United, but gets their result that they want?
I mean, I should hope so. I feel like in the last two games, up until about 75th, 80th minute, they've gotten to that point. And considering DC is top in the Eastern Conference table, this would be a huge result, whether it be a draw or a win, for Orlando City. With Brekshay coming back, that'll help a lot. Hopefully Brian Rochez may make an appearance. He looked really good in the World Cup, the Under-20s World Cup. So if he can bring that form back to Orlando, you may be seeing the Brian Rochez that the team paid for finally. And then fans can stop complaining about how they spent all the money for nothing. I'm just annoyed by all that, the whole talk about all the players that they brought in, like Rivas and Rochez, and how they're not scoring, and it's like, oh, get rid of them now, because they're not going to be worth anything, and, fans don't seem, they seem to not understand that it actually takes time to adjust to living in a new country, with a new team, speaking a new language.
Well, chemistry means a lot in a game of soccer, and so the people that say Martin Patterson has to go because they've seen all of 37 minutes of him playing, they're kind of nutty in my book.
I mean,
you could say, okay, he didn't have a great 37 minutes, but that's not even a half of a game. If you went, and not very many people did, but if you went over and saw the team play in the preseason over in Bradenton, you got a little bit better idea of what he could do and how well he really combined with Kaká. And in the friendly against Dallas, although Dallas played a few younger guys mostly, we didn't have Fabian Castillo and Blas Perez and those guys, but he was amazing. He looked like an MLS All-Star in that game. And the way that he and Kaká and Molino all worked together was phenomenal, and it really kind of bothers me that people didn't really get a chance to see that. But getting back to the game, Kevin, should we expect a win from this team? They've only won one home game. I mean, they're not out of the woods as far as getting results at home, are they?
I think as we continue to defy expectations, so to speak, I think we do expect a win at home. I think you always have to. But when you look at MLS parity, you have a chance to win every time, but you also have a chance to lose. DC has shown us their ability to beat us. And they lead the league. I mean, that's not like – I think it's impressive we've competed with this club. And I think we're a different club now than when we lost to them the both times. I think you have Tally Hall in goal now. You've got a lot of young guys coming on, coming to their own now. So I think DC may be a little surprised by the fact that we're finding our stride, and hopefully we can kind of surprise them. But I want to say we expect to win, but also it's a game that makes me nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly nervous. I mean, they're a good team, and we haven't seen him with Fabian Espíndola yet, and he's back and healthy, and he really turned around the midweek game last week against the Chicago Fire. The Fire were all over DC United in that match, and Espíndola came on, and with just a couple of corner kicks, put the ball on the head of Jairo Arrieta for a couple quick goals, and then he set up a third goal. So, I mean, he really showed his quality in that game and turned the game on its head. It should be an interesting game, finally seeing, I think, close to a full strength DC United. I don't think we've really seen that yet. I think they're a different team without Espíndola. They're more of a grinding team, which I think they have a bunch of veterans who are well suited to that style. But Espíndola gives them that quick strike capability because any play can become dangerous. He's not like David Akam fast, but he gets into spaces and puts balls right on the money where they need to be, and he's a difference maker. So it'll be interesting to see if Orlando City can get another result and run the unbeaten streak to 5. It would be nice because we'd really like to get some breathing room over some of these teams behind in the standings. Orlando City went up to 4th in the table and had the possibility of going up as high as 3rd, but Toronto won over DC. And so, you know, we're going to get an angry DC team that that lost.
Yeah, they did. They did lose.
So it'll be interesting to see. Why don't we turn our attention now to – this is a perfect segue, actually. I want to talk about Breck Shea. And he didn't play against Germany, but he did play against the Netherlands. And now the provisional lineups have come out for the Gold Cup. And surprisingly, we see DeMarcus Beasley coming out of international retirement. And I wanted to just get both of you guys' opinion. I'll start with you, Kevin, on what does DeMarcus Beasley's inclusion mean about Breck Shea at left back for the U.S. men's national team?
I think you've got a player coming back from injury who's been good on the international level, but not, you know, certainly maybe in training camp still needs someone to challenge him for the position. I think Beasley is probably the only person who can do that right now due to the fact that we lack a left back forever. I think since probably the 90s, no, not that far back, but it seems like it's we've lacked it for years now. We've lacked left back. So I think you need to bring him in for coverage. I think you need to bring him in to challenge in training camp. But I don't think Shea's lost his position by any means. I don't think Beasley's taking his position. And I don't think you're going to see Shea pushed up further on the pitch. I think we've got a good midfield right now, and we seem to have people who are working well in midfield. So I think it's just kind of more precautionary for both the player coming back from injury and also just to have someone, you know, to competing with him for the position.
Austin, what do you think about DeMarcus Beasley's return and what it might mean for Breck Shea?
Oh, I mean, you know, at first when I saw his name, I thought it was a typo because he was pretty clear that he was going to retire from international football. But then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, I guess I'll come back. But, you know, with Klinsmann, I think he still considers Beasley one of the top left backs in the U.S. And not only that, but, you know, Beasley has that experience and leadership. Who captained the U.S. back in 2013 for the Gold Cup when they won. So that experience could be, you know, one of the things that he brings him in for. Maybe not to necessarily play very often, but just to be one of those guys in the locker room, kind of helping the young guys, maybe some of the guys who haven't gotten many caps, just to be that kind of voice saying, hey, you know, I've been through this. This is kind of how to go about it.
Is he the Shannon Box of the men's national team? Is that what you're saying?
I guess you could say that. That's kind of an apt comparison.
Let me say that DeMarcus Beasley's inclusion in the U.S. men's national team for years has bothered me. I just think he has been really poor at times. And yet, for Houston Dynamo, he does a really nice job. It's probably just a matter of there wasn't anybody better, but he's never stuck out to me at left back as a guy that I particularly wanted out there. But I've been wrong before, and I've been wrong again, because I didn't particularly want Bobby Wood out there at any point during any game, and he scored 2 goals in the last 2 games that were winners against 2 teams that we had won, had never previously beaten the Netherlands ever in 4 tries and had never won on German soil. And so now you've got the U.S. men's national team beating 2 teams in the top 6 of FIFA rankings in, you know, basically in less than a week. And, you know, the U.S. came in as the number 27 team. I don't know how they're going to, you know, judge this and move them around. Certainly they should probably go up a little bit. But is there any takeaways from these 2 wins, Kevin, that we can take into the Gold Cup?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've as a longtime U.S. fan, you kind of get nervous about us winning because then we get confident and we lose. So I'm a little cynical, unfortunately, but I think they're great wins. I think they're really, if you told me, you know, a week ago that we were going to go into Holland and Germany and take away 2 wins, I would have told you you're crazy. And I have a lot of confidence in the team. I just think those are great teams at home and great clubs overall. So I think that the club has to, you know, the U.S. has to have a lot of confidence coming out of this. And I think the Gold Cup, which is kind of a you know, I always say it's kind of a competition between us and Mexico at the end, hopefully. It kind of ends up that way usually. I think this is a, you know, this is a cup we should be winning, the Gold Cup we should be winning, and these are good games for us, raising our international profile and, you know, helping us to kind of continue to build confidence as a club. So, yeah, I think they're great wins. I get nervous that we get too confident, but besides that, it's good.
Austin, is there any reason at all that Klinsmann shouldn't just run this same lineup out in the Gold Cup after seeing them beat the Netherlands and Germany on the road? Should we even bother giving a call to Jermaine Jones and Jozy Altidore and Clint Dempsey?
Well, I don't, actually, you know what? Jermaine Jones was left off the roster, I believe.
Yeah, well, there were several guys that weren't, like, there were regulars that weren't necessary. For one reason or another, weren't called in this time. But, I mean, you get those kind of results with that team. Maybe it's a chemistry thing. Maybe we don't call those guys back. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. You know, I'm not going to try and pretend that I'm familiar with how the Gold Cup works and everything, because I haven't really paid attention to that until fairly recently. So in terms of the guys that Klinsmann has picked, I mean, they're familiar names. There really isn't anyone on the roster that hasn't, you know, made an appearance in the last 6 months or so, except for Brad Davis. I haven't seen his name in a while. But, you know, if you're trying to win a major competition, you want to try and go with some of the players that you feel like are going to give you the best chance to win. You know, even regardless of the performances that have, you know, beaten, you know, top teams in the world, you know, as a manager, I feel like Klinsmann probably wants some kind of comfort level, going into a competition that, you know, he probably wants to win. You know, because he said it's time for us to win now. It, you know, it's not no longer about rebuilding or, you know, development or whatnot. So I feel like he's trying to put out the team that he feels like will give him the best chance of winning in a tournament style, not just a singular game.
Right. Well, if the U.S. wins the Gold Cup, they are the CONCACAF representative in the Confederations Cup, the next Confederations Cup. If they lose it, there will be a one-game playoff between the U.S. and whoever they would presumably lose, whoever wins this one. The one-game playoff would determine who goes to the Confederations Cup for CONCACAF. So it is an important tournament, certainly, and you know, you want to win starting in your own federation first and then, you know, take on the world. And with CONCACAF being what it is, if you're not the champion of CONCACAF, you're probably not going to be that competitive with the better teams in the world. So, Kevin, let me get your thoughts on where do you stand, talent versus – or perceived talent and experience versus chemistry?
I'm glad you brought the question up, because I was just thinking about – I wanted to add something about the team in general. And I agree with Austin. You're bringing the people in who can perform well over an entire tournament. I think the veterans will be useful. But one of the takeaways when we left Brazil was this fear that there was no youth movement in the United States team. I remember hearing, you know, all the talking heads of ESPN saying this, that, you know, there's no young players we're excited about. We're really kind of nervous. You know, we're probably not going to do very well in the future because – these guys are just going to retire soon. By the time, you know, by the time of the next World Cup, these guys will be playing. And you see these young guys coming in and doing this, and also an under-20 World Cup as well. So I think there are young guys, maybe guys that weren't on our radar, but certainly Klinsmann has found them. And I'm looking at players on the team right now, and I don't know them. You know, and I'm like, man, that's kind of rare for me. I usually know, you know, I've kind of obscure players playing across the world, but I don't know them. And I think that you're bringing these young players into this Gold Cup, hopefully giving them a championship, giving them a trophy. It can only help us moving forward in general. So I think right now it's a good time to be a U.S. national team fan, really.
It really is, and I think Germany should have to give us the World Cup for beating them.
I think we get to borrow it for tonight and we have to get back in the morning.
Yeah. So speaking of the you know, the international game right now. It's pretty awesome to be a U.S. fan right now because you've got the men's teams playing well. Women's team is off to a good start in the Women's World Cup. They actually didn't play anywhere near their best and still got a two-goal win over a pretty tough Australia team the other night.
Yeah, the Australian news was pretty salty about that.
That was a blog.
Oh, okay, okay.
I believe that was a blog, and yes, they were talking about how the U.S. was lucky to get a result in that game. They were thoroughly outplayed and outclassed, uh-huh. And this team is certainly better than the Americans. And
it was actually,
you know,
an Australian national team's official blog, though. So yes,
the Matildas. Yeah, so they were a bit salty, but you know, scoreboard. That's all I got to say. Scoreboard.
You know, really,
so then you
really
got the.
No, sorry, really fast, Michael. I was just going to say, you know, when we look at World Cups and we look at men's mm-hmm. World Cups for years now, and you always have these German teams and Brazilian teams that start slow and end up winning the whole thing. I think good teams do start slow sometimes, so I wasn't really worried about the U.S. starting slow in that game at all. So.
And I didn't think that Jill Ellis played her best lineup, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I thought that the team had been really gaining some confidence with players like Morgan Bryan on the pitch, and obviously Alex Morgan wasn't ready to start and match fit for a full 90. And so when your star striker, who, you know, has world-class speed, is not in there, it's going to affect your team a little bit because, I mean, you're now playing to a stationary target with Abby Wambach as striker. You know, aside from that World Cup, you know, we've got the U20 team, which is in the quarterfinals of the FIFA U20 World Cup in New Zealand after a big win over Colombia in the middle of the night last night, our time anyway. And what an incredible result, considering the fact that Colombia had a penalty and the U.S. finished the game a man down. And the U.S. wins it 1-0, and they're on to the next round. Pretty good showing by the U20 team so far. And let's not forget the U23 team equaled their best ever finish in the Toulon tournament. They finished third by beating England the other day. So a pretty good week for the international
team. I think
teams.
So, yeah. And we took over FIFA. So we arrested FIFA as well. So, you know.
Right.
Oh,
that's right.
And you know, the men, you know, the senior national team is undefeated since we did that. So, you know, just saying.
Well, the tweet of the day, I don't remember who it was, but I retweeted it. They were saying that the Americans are playing with the swagger of a team that just arrested FIFA. And it's hard to argue with that. You know, it's very cool, Kevin, like you were saying earlier, to see these young kids coming up and playing really well. Guys like Jordan Morris are going to be stars, you know, in the international game. And, you know, this might be finally the renaissance we're seeing as the soccer explosion in this country is starting to produce some fruit with these younger players coming up and feeding into that national team.
You know, we have – it's interesting because Klinsmann gets a lot of flack for being critical of MLS. I think the coaches before, Bradley and Arena and all those guys, they kind of catered a little bit to MLS because, A, it was this kind of league that was supposed to be building, you know, future stars. But also it was the core of the hope of U.S. soccer. I think now that league's established, and it can be criticized now by our head coach, I think you have a college player essentially in Morris. It's been the 90s since we had a college player on our club. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a college player play at the top level. So I think it's neat you have this kind of relationship between Klinsmann and U.S. soccer that isn't always a good one, but I think it opens up Klinsmann's eyes to just pulling players from everywhere. I was looking at this guy, Yarborough. He's a goalie from Mexico. He's an American goalie, but he plays in Mexico. Never heard of him before. You know, he's finding these guys and giving them chances, and I think that it can only help us in the future. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of Bradley and Dempsey and those guys, and I've certainly cheered for him for years, but I love seeing these new guys come in and really take it, you know, with this great confidence, take it to these, you know, great clubs in Europe. And I mean, you think about Colombia right now is one of the hot, you know, they're kind of the hot club to like in terms of national teams, and we beat them, you know. So, yeah. And, you know, obviously under 20 version, but still fantastic. So, yeah, it's really good.
And we haven't even gotten to see, really, with the national team yet. There's probably still a year or two off before we get Gedeon Zalelem in the national team. And he's certainly a future star to watch.
Yeah.
Boy, he is impressive. I've been watching him in those, you know, World Cup games. I mean, his ball control is unreal. I'm really excited for him to get some, you know, senior team minutes eventually.
And, you know, we take a lot of flack because so many of our guys are, like, dual citizens. But, you know, you look around the world, and that's not an isolated case. I mean, you got Boateng with Germany. Germany's got a few guys, actually, that are not solely German nationals. So, you know, criticize if you will, but, you know, guys like Jordan Morris are going to always be there and are always going to be taking up spots on the team. So, you know, this is America's team, and we're going to see – it's going to be an interesting World Cup cycle, guys. I really am feeling good about, you know, the U.S.'s chances, although the games are all the way over in Russia, unless, you know, they take the games away from Russia. honestly, don't think that they will take it from Russia. I could see Qatar losing theirs, but I honestly don't think that as much as we would love to have the U.S. the World Cup on U.S. soil, I think it would be a probably a nice conciliatory gesture if we don't, like, push for that. If it does get taken from Qatar, my thought would be maybe to send it someplace like Australia or someplace in Europe. What do you guys think?
I'd say England, just because they're pretty much prepared for it. Similar to America, they've got all the, you know, the football or soccer stadiums all pretty much set up all over the UK. So, you know, they'd probably be able to do it at, you know, with short notice. And plus, you know, it's not much of a stretch in terms of, like, you know, television hours and whatnot. It's, you know, it's kind of a 5 hours ahead of the Eastern, you know, East Coast over here. So, you know, watching the games and tuning in and scheduling wouldn't be as much of an issue as trying to do it. What is it? How many hours is Australia ahead of us?
It's like about they're like about 12 hours. Depends on where in Australia, but they're like about 12 hours ahead of us. They're in the future. They should be sending me lottery numbers. but yeah, I mean, I think I've seen the Australian stadium list of the size of their stadiums. I think that they're a country that could certainly they have the infrastructure in place to do it. There's a number of countries in Europe that could do it. I think Italy could do it. Spain, Germany, certainly. England, so, and probably France,
the U.S.
So there's a number of countries that can do it. I just don't, you know, we like to beat our chests a little bit and say, well, we could have the thing tomorrow if we needed to, but there's a little more planning than that goes into it. But there are other countries that could conceivably host the thing. Heck, I wouldn't even mind going back to Brazil. Although most of those stadiums are now parking lots.
they give them a chance to use them again. So.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's pretty an effective use of our time. And we didn't have a guest this week. Apologies. That's on me. You can write your hate mail to me at Austin David on Twitter. but before we get out of here, guys, let's get some predictions for Sunday's game against DC United. Austin, we'll start with you. What's the final score going to be? What's the result? How do you see this playing out?
I'm going to say that Orlando City wins 1-0 in the 90th minute off a free kick. We're going to do it. We're going to do it back to them.
The old rope-a-dope.
Yeah. It only seems nice. There.
So who's going to get this magical free kick, Austin?
Kick-off.
Of course. Kevin, what's the key matchup for you? What's going to happen?
What's going to happen? I want to say we win, but I think we tie. I think we tied 2-2. I think that we let one really stupid goal in, and they get one brilliant goal. And then I think, let's say probably Ribeiro and Kaká score, and I think we probably win it in like the 70th or 80th minute. I think we leave it for late. We come from behind. We don't lose from behind. We tie from behind this time. So.
Okay. I'm going to go with an either or scenario here.
How long?
And I'll tell you why. If Bill Hamid plays, it's going to be a 1-1 draw. I just don't see Orlando keeping their firepower quiet the whole night, especially with the Spindola back. He's either going to score a goal or set somebody up for a goal over the course of the game. And if Hamid's playing, I don't see us putting more than one behind him because he's just freaking phenomenal. He's like not even human, I think. So we should probably petition the league to kick aliens out of the league and so he and Jovinko can go bye-bye. if Hamid doesn't play, I would agree that it's probably going to be like a 2-2 or maybe a 3-2 game. And I think Orlando is capable of scoring three goals if they dominate the game the way they did the first game, certainly. I just can't predict that, though, knowing that this is the top team in all of Major League Soccer right now. They're the Supporters Shield front runners. I'm going to say it's 1-1 or 2-2, depending on who the goalies are. So that's how I see it. So any last words from you, Kevin, about this weekend's match?
No, I think we've kind of covered it. I think it'll be a good one. I think that I'll pander to the fans. They should go to this one. I think this will be a good game to go to. If you haven't made a game yet this season, it's a fantastic one to start with. I think it'll be a very competitive game for us. I'm really kind of excited to see us match up now that we're finding our stride. Now that we're learning to win games, I think DC got us on some lucky shots. So I'd love to see some revenge enacted this weekend on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I went back this week, actually, and I watched a replay of the Luis Silva free kick from the first match. And I'm convinced that Tally Hall makes that save.
Yeah.
I think that Ricketts was a little late picking it up, and I don't think his reaction time is what Tally Hall's is. So I think that Hall, even if he didn't pick it up until when Ricketts did, still would have been quick enough to get over and cover it.
Was that Sarin who made the foul?
It was, yes. It was a silly foul.
I think he's grown a little bit too. I don't think he makes that stupid foul. I think he relaxes a little bit more. So,
well, we shall see. He certainly a few weeks ago had a silly foul against San Jose.
He's a little hot-headed sometimes.
I don't even know that was a hot-headed foul against San Jose. I think Seren was just kind of really trying to win the ball and really trying hard to win the ball and not thinking where am I and where is this player. And he's got his back to goal. Maybe I shouldn't press the issue. Maybe I should just maintain position. I don't know that it was a hot-headed foul like what we might have seen out of Ramos, for example. But Austin, before we get out of here, your final thoughts on this weekend. I haven't seen anything about what the crowd is, but I'm assuming it's going to be another big crowd on a Sunday night. And what's the key matchup? What's the determining factor?
Just keeping shape defensively, I think. They've done pretty well throughout, but you know, last week with that counterattack of Chicago's, somehow David Akam found himself kind of alone in the middle of the 18-yard box. Can't let that happen again. Gotta just kind of mark up. You're playing the best team in the East as of right now, so you can't let those little instances that, you know, coaches said so much about happen. So if they can, somehow keep everything together and not make those little silly mistakes, I think they can pull out with the win.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. From my perspective, I think the big matchup is between the center backs and Fabian Espíndola. And I want to see better chemistry out of Colin and St. Ledger, or we'll see if Adrian Heath goes back to Seb Hines, knowing that Hines and Colin together have played a lot and might have a better chemistry and understanding for where each other is positionally on the game. So that's it for this edition of the Mainland Podcast, Episode 16. Thank you so much for listening. Please leave us feedback at iTunes and give us a rating of 5 or more stars. It's a 5-star scale, so I don't think you can give us more, but it would be nice. Maybe give extra ones in the text of the review or something. So until next week, we're actually going to try to cram this thing in early and talk a little bit about the U.S. Open Cup. We've got some really, really crowded fixtures coming up with U.S. Open Cup play on Wednesday next week. Also, then we'll play on the weekend and then midweek again. So I think it's like 4 games in 11 days or something like that, something ridiculous. So we're going to see a lot of players. We're going to see a lot of different formations and, well, probably a few different formations and a lot of different lineups over the rest of June. And then we get into July, and we got the Gold Cup, and we already know we're going to be probably missing Breck Shea. We are probably going to be missing Darwin Serén. We're probably going to be missing Kyle Larin, and we may be missing Brian Rochez. He's on the provisional 35-man roster for Honduras. So it's going to get interesting again.
Yeah.
Adrian Heath's got some personnel issues. And then, you know, the transfer window is going to be open, so anything can happen. For good friends Kevin Mercer and Austin David, I am Michael Citro saying, go City!
Go City!